The timing was terrible. It was dead in the water, canceled. But with some amazing innovations in design, the Spitzer Space Telescope was reborn. How did this good idea for an infrared telescope in space survive these trials to become the last of the great observatories? Hello, I'm Robert Hurt.
The Spitzer Space Telescope podcast is part of a series highlighting recent discoveries in infrared astronomy. It's produced by NASA's Spitzer Science Center at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. The Spitzer mission is managed by NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Today we're here with Dr. George Reiki from the University of Arizona Department of Astronomy and Planetary Sciences. He's here to chat about the origins of the Spitzer mission, which is the subject of a book he's just written. It's called The Last of the Great Observatories, and it's just been published by the University of Arizona Press. Thanks for being with us, George.
Oh, it's great to be able to talk about things.
You've actually been associated with the Spitzer mission a little longer than most people who are working on the project now, right?
Well, I don't know. 23 years is probably a little above average.
So you've certainly been with the project for quite a while. What about that actually inspired you then to put this down and write a book about it?
It's really interesting to see how a big, complicated project like Spitzer gets going at all. And in fact, for a long time, we didn't get going. And I got interested in what was making those things happen the way they did. Why did we have so much trouble selling the mission? What was the underlying cause for that as we built the mission? So it really was an adventure in trying to figure out why things happened.
So this is as much about the psychology and the politics of it as the engineering.
Definitely. There's at least as much psychology and politics as there is engineering and science. That was the first discovery I made.
So what were the steps that got the ball rolling for the Spitzer mission to begin with?
There was a very unique woman at NASA headquarters, Nancy Bogus, and she decided that the way to get an infrared space mission going was to pick a bunch of scientists to make a science working group. And so then we were picked, and we were the advocates for this mission. But we got picked when the Hubble telescope budget was going up rapidly, and just a couple years before the Challenger disaster. And then it led into the recession in 1991, which was at the peak of a number of space disasters. The Hubble telescope optics problem, losing Mars Observer. There were a couple of military rockets that failed. And so in the end, we put in about 8 years leading up to getting canceled.
At this point in time, was the Spitzer mission considered to be something that the shuttle mission would launch?
We got picked as the shuttle infrared telescope facility. It wasn't Spitzer, you know, it wasn't the Space Infrared Telescope Facility. We've had three names. And that was because people thought that the only way to do this was to bolt a telescope in the back of the shuttle, take it up, observe for a couple of weeks, bring it back down, refurbish it, and launch it again. It would have cost, we now know, the better part of $1 billion per 2 weeks of observing to do that. So it wasn't a very good idea, but that's where we started.
Wow, those 2 weeks would have cost nearly Spitzer's entire current budget, and it's still going strong after nearly 3 years. So it sounds like you were trying to get this mission started in one of the worst possible climates for space science. What helped you get past those hurdles?
Well, the first round, we really didn't. We kept coming up with new mission concepts, but they never got anywhere. But after we got canceled, we held a retreat. And we decided then on two critical things. One was we picked four defining science programs, and every feature of the mission had to be justified in terms of those four programs. And then the other critical thing was that Frank Lowe, who's an emeritus professor now at the University of Arizona, had a brainstorm. It turned out at 11 one night, and he went off and frantically sketched until 2 in the morning of a whole new concept of how to build a cold telescope to go into space. And eventually that became the way we actually built the mission.
So this really was an 11th hour kind of redesign.
You've got it. It was the 11th hour brainstorm that saved us.
So what was this innovation that he came up with?
The idea was to actually launch the telescope warm outside of the liquid helium Dewar or thermos jug that had to keep the instruments cold. And what was important about it is that previously, as with all other cold telescopes, we had put the telescope into the thermos jug, which meant the thermos had to be really big, it had to hold the entire telescope. And Frank realized that you didn't have to do that. You got the telescope into space, it would radiate its heat out into space and cool down very well without the help of the Dewar. And so that enabled us to make a much lighter mission, and more importantly, it provided the foundation for much bigger telescopes to get launched. So the James Webb Space Telescope is built on exactly the same principle.
So with all of the trials and tribulations of this project, was there ever a point that you just felt that this was almost too much? Or did you feel like all along it was just going to happen and you just had to stick it out?
Oh, I think everybody oscillated between those two points of view approximately every 6 months for 12 years. So we went through a lot of cycles.
Are there any other moments that you specifically remember that were particularly memorable times in this project?
Well, yes. The most memorable moment is the launch. It was a little crowded where we were, and I got pushed into a bush in the swamp there down at Cape Kennedy.
They have alligators in those swamps, you know.
In fact, when I turned to get back in the car, I noticed a sign on the bush that said, "Beware of alligator." But basically, things had gone so smoothly that you just had a feeling of comfort that it was going to be okay. For example, we had to launch right in the middle of the hurricane season, and there was a lightning storm at a critical time in launch preparations that closed every launch pad on the Cape except ours. It didn't get close enough to close ours. And at that point I said, you know, after all these years of work and the first 12 years of bad luck, it has really turned around. If even the weather is going to let us launch and keep out of the way, it's got to go okay.
Well, George, thanks so much for coming today and telling us a little bit about the history of the Spitzer mission.
It's been a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Dr. George Reike about his book, The Last of the Great Observatories, Spitzer and the Era of Faster, Better, Cheaper at NASA. For the Spitzer Science Center, I'm Robert Hurt.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.spitzer.caltech.edu. You can browse our image galleries, read about the latest results, and subscribe to our newsletter. On behalf of NASA's Spitzer Science Center, thanks for listening.